Paris, the city of lights, generates more wealth per capita than nearly any other European city. Its luxury goods sector alone, dominated by brands such as LVMH, Hermès, and Chanel, exports 75 billion euros in products annually. Yet, step outside the Périphérique, the ring road that circles Paris, and you enter a different country altogether. In places like Lens, Valenciennes, and Saint-Étienne, unemployment sits above 15%. Infrastructure is crumbling and public services have hollowed out. This isn't by accident. France's public debt has tripled over the past 25 years, reaching 3.4 trillion euros. Interest payments alone now exceed the entire budget for universities and research institutions. Meanwhile, since 2017, the country has gone through 7 prime ministers, none of whom have delivered lasting reforms. Real wages have stagnated while living costs have climbed sharply. The pension system, once a pillar of the French social model, now consumes 14% of the entire economy, which is more than education, defense, and transportation combined. Housing affordability has deteriorated and youth unemployment sits at 18%, among the highest in the developed world. At heart, France's problem is simple: persistent overspending. For over 51 consecutive years, the state has run budget deficits, always spending more than it collects in taxes. Now, the bill is coming due. When you think about it, it's ironic. France once helped design the Eurozone's fiscal rules, yet now it stands as the biggest threat to breaking them. For most of the 20th century, France was a model of prosperity. It built a comprehensive welfare state based on a simple social contract. If you got sick, the state covered the medical bills. If you lost your job, unemployment benefits kept you afloat. When you retired, a pension was guaranteed. From cradle to grave, the state would take care of you. For decades, the model worked. Growth was strong, living standards were high, and France became Europe's second largest economy. Many saw it as proof that capitalism and socialism could coexist. But there was a catch. Revenues alone never fully covered expenditures, and so the deficit was financed through debt. In fact, France has run a budget deficit every single year since 1974. To be fair, debt isn't inherently bad. It can fuel growth when used for productive investment, and for years, France did just that. The economy grew, the workforce was young, and millions paid into the system. This all made the social benefits seem bearable. But over time, the arrangement became harder to sustain. In essence, France faces three predicaments: a shrinking population, an industrial exodus, and a political system unable to fix either. These issues are not separate problems that can be tackled individually. They're interconnected, self-reinforcing, and together, they're pushing the country toward a reckoning. France's demographic crisis is perhaps the most pressing, and it's worse than it looks. In 2010, the country's fertility rate stood at 2.0 children per woman, the highest in Europe. Today, it's 1.6 and falling. The number of births dropped from 833,000 in 2010 to 663,000 in 2024. That is a 20% decline, steeper than Germany's. The timing makes it even worse. French baby boomers, those born between 1945 and 1973, are now retiring on a mass scale. Around 800,000 people exit the workforce each year, while only about 700,000 young people replace them. That's a yearly shortfall of 100,000 workers, compounding indefinitely. The numbers no longer add up. In 1990, there were 5 working-age adults for every retiree. By 2000, that ratio fell to 4, and by 2010, to 3, and today, it's close to 2. You can see where this is going. By 2040, France will have 1.5 working-age adults for every retiree. Pensions and healthcare will consume an ever larger share of the budget, while the tax base needed to fund them will continue to shrink. That means every French worker will be paying not just for themselves, but for someone else's retirement. But it gets worse because productivity isn't compensating. In a healthy economy, workers become more productive over time through better technology, education, and infrastructure. That rising productivity can offset the effects of demographic decline, since one person can do the work of two people from a generation ago. But in France, productivity growth has stalled. Between 2015 and 2023, French productivity increased by just 0.3% annually, which is half the OECD average. This creates a vicious feedback loop. An aging population demands more spending on healthcare and pensions. But with fewer workers and stagnant productivity, there's less wealth to fund those demands. The second crisis is industrial decline. In 1980, manufacturing made up 26% of France's economy. Today, it's about 13%. That might sound like normal deindustrialization, something that every advanced economy experiences as it shifts toward services. But in France, the fallout has been existential. Here's the thing, manufacturing jobs tend to cluster and multiply. One factory job supports three or four additional positions in logistics, maintenance, retail, and services. So, when factories close in places like Lyon or Lille, entire ecosystems collapse. Property values fall, young people leave, tax revenues plummet, and the remaining population ages and becomes more dependent on welfare. France experienced this firsthand. When the euro was introduced in 1999, it lost 900,000 manufacturing jobs within a decade. Global competition played a role, but France was also uniquely exposed because of its labor laws. You see, French labor is the most expensive in the eurozone. When including social benefits, employers pay nearly 50% more than the gross salary. For comparison, in Germany, it's about 30%, and in Poland, it's 20%. And so, manufacturers left. Why pay triple for a French worker when someone in Poland can do the same job for much less? The outcome was an industrial exodus. Factories shut down and moved abroad. Michelin relocated tire production from Clermont-Ferrand to Poland and Spain. Renault shifted assembly operations to Morocco and Romania. And PSA Peugeot Citroën closed plants in Aulnay-sous-Bois and moved production to Slovakia. Some of the headquarters stayed in France for tax purposes, but most of the actual production left. What remained was a split economy. High-value services concentrated in Paris, while the provinces were left with a decaying industrial base. France's third crisis is political, and it's the hardest to fix because it's embedded in the government's institutions. The problem starts with polarization. French politics has split into five major blocks: far-right, center-right, center, center-left, and far-left. None of these is capable of forming a majority, leaving the lower house of parliament divided. Political compromises are nearly impossible, and every government survives only by avoiding controversial decisions. When Macron pushed through the pension reform to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64, he won legally but lost politically. His party shattered, his approval ratings plunged, and the reform itself became so toxic that no one has dared propose anything similar since. This political climate goes far beyond pensions. It affects everything. Take tax reform as an example. The current system is convoluted, riddled with loopholes, and discourages investment. Fixing it, however, means some groups lose benefits, which triggers protests and political backlash. Labor reform is another example. Rigid regulations keep youth unemployment high, but any attempt at reform sparks union resistance, street protests, and political risk. The result is paralysis. Since 2017, France has had 7 prime ministers. Most lasted less than 18 months, though. Each promised reform, but delivered nothing meaningful. The bureaucracy keeps running, the state keeps borrowing, but the problems go unaddressed. And here's the dangerous part. When nothing changes, voters tend to radicalize. Support for the National Rally, which is Marine Le Pen's far-right party, has grown from 18% to 33% in the last 7 years. Meanwhile, on the left, Jean-Luc Mélenchon's France Unbound movement now holds 22%. Between these two juggernauts, anti-establishment parties claim more than half the electorate. They can't govern, but they can block others from governing, which gives them political leverage. And so, in French politics, self-preservation has become self-destruction. This matters because France's problems require urgent, coordinated action across multiple domains simultaneously. The pension crisis can't be solved without labor reform, labor markets can't be reformed without industrial policy, and industrial policy is impossible without tax reform. Everything is connected, which means everything must move together. But the political system is now inadvertently blocking exactly that kind of comprehensive reform. What people believe often outweighs whether something truly works. The economy is proof of that. For decades, France's economic model worked because investors believed it would continue working, but now that belief is cracking. France's 10-year bond yield has risen to 3.2%, which is the highest since 2012 and nearly on par with Italy. In fiscal policy, that is a dramatic turn. For most of the euro era, France borrowed at rates close to Germany's, a sign that markets viewed French debt as fundamentally safe. The spread between French and German bonds rarely exceeded 50 basis points. Today, it's approaching 80 basis points and widening. This may seem like a minor technicality, but the implications are profound. Each basis point adds billions in extra interest costs for France. And these payments can't be cut or delayed. They must be paid in full and on time, or the country defaults. The EU's Stability and Growth Pact, which is a set of rules on deficits and debt, was designed to prevent precisely the kind of situation France is now in. You see, the euro was built on a simple premise. Without shared safety nets, each country had to maintain fiscal discipline. The euro has no transfer union, no shared debt, and no automatic support from rich regions to poor ones. Instead, the system relies on fiscal restraint, and most members stick to it. France, however, has broken these rules since they were established. The official limits say governments should keep deficits below 3% and debt below 60% of GDP. But France is running deficits of 6% and debt to GDP of 113%. Whenever Brussels brings this up, the French nod politely and do nothing. Ultimately, the slow-motion collapse of France runs counter to historical norms. It has nuclear energy, strong infrastructure, skilled people, global influence, and a UN Security Council seat. Yet it drifts toward irrelevance because it refuses to make hard political decisions. The numbers are unforgiving. At this pace, France's debt will top 125% of GDP by 2030. Interest payments will surpass 100 billion euros, while pensions will require around 50 billion euros in annual bailouts. This is not sustainable in any shape or form. Something has to give. Either lawmakers bite the bullet and push through the reforms, or markets impose austerity through rising borrowing costs. If nothing else, the European Central Bank breaks its own rules and finances French deficits indefinitely. Whatever happens, Paris itself will remain wealthy, its luxury brands will thrive, and tourists will keep visiting the Eiffel Tower. The rest of the country, however, will rot slowly. The France that once shaped Europe and challenged global powers will become sterile. Within a generation, France may become the very Britain it once mocked, old, poor, and toothless. There is, of course, a solution to demographic decline, and it's technological. What France needs is a productivity multiplier. Robotics provides exactly that. machines that work continuously, don't retire, and can offset the loss of human workers. A single humanoid robot operating 20 hours a day, 350 days a year, will deliver 4 times the output of a human worker. With a robotic workforce, France could reverse its industrial decline and become relevant again. Manufacturers that relocated abroad could return to French soil. In a way, robotics is the only solution that addresses demographic collapse without requiring politically toxic reforms. And that's where today's sponsor, Humanoid Global Holdings, comes in. See the ticker on screen. Investing in a robotic future is not easy. Most robotics companies are privately funded startups locked behind venture capital. They're essentially inaccessible to individual investors and are reserved for well-connected angel investors, hedge funds, endowments, and big tech. Even the ETFs that eventually arrive focus on publicly traded companies, not the private startups where the real growth happens. Humanoid Global, however, is one of the few standalone investment companies that invests directly in private robotics startups. This approach is unique, and it offers retail investors a way into robotics startups through its portfolio of 5 key businesses. 3 of these are particularly relevant to France. The first is Agility Robotics, the developer of Digit, which is a bipedal robot backed by Amazon and Nvidia. It handles warehouse logistics, precisely what the French regions need to remain competitive. The second is Aptronic, which has developed Apollo, a general-purpose manufacturing robot supported by Google and Mercedes-Benz. If scaled up, Apollo robots could bring back manufacturing jobs France lost after the euro's introduction and correct the country's labor cost equation. The third is Formic, a robotics as a service company backed by Lux Capital and Mitsubishi that offers robots on subscription. It solves the problem of upfront automation costs that small manufacturers simply cannot afford. Humanoid Global also invests in RideScan, which develops AI safety platforms for autonomous robots, and How2Robot, a marketplace that connects businesses with automation suppliers. For France, robotics is the only viable answer to its aging society and shrinking workforce, and Humanoid Global is in prime position to be part of the solution. Check out their ticker on the screen. Shares are available through Interactive Brokers, Schwab, Fidelity, and E-Trade. You can learn more by clicking the link in the description. Just make sure to do your own due diligence. I've been your host Shirvan from Caspian Report. If you approve of what we do, please leave a comment, hit the like button, and mayhaps share the video. In any case, thank you for your time, and salut.